This is the Diehards.
Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Thankfully, it's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Tom Brady takes the snap, drops to the knee, and the Patriots have won their sixth Super Bowl title.
The Diehards start now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need to know what it takes for a home loan to fit your budget and your family? Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Welcome into the Diehards on a Monday night. Alex Barth and Bobby Kravitzky in for Anthony Pepe, as is the case most Mondays. We're going to get into the Julio Jones trade tonight. First show for us here at the Boston studio since that happened. We're going to get into the NBA playoffs. I want to get into some baseball that happened over the weekend. But I have to start, Bobby, if you could tell by my tone, I'm not
He's
in a good mood.
Fired up, folks.
I walked in here. I was in a fine mood. And now I've got to watch my Boston Bruins just get the game absolutely ripped out of their hands. I am not a complaint about the officials person, Bobby. I think it's obnoxious. I really do. But four goals, three on the power play, two on highly, highly questionable calls. And you know what? It's been in baseball, and we'll talk to Jake Asman later on in the program, who's a Yankees fan. If you saw that call in the Red Sox-Yankees game tonight, the NBA has been a mess through and through, and now we have this. What is it, Bobby, about fans coming back in the building that all of the officials are collectively messing their pants? And that is me trying to say it as clean as possible. What the hell is going on?
Yeah, I mean, you can feel the frustration and the heat coming off Alex right now because the theme of the postseason...
Is it not justified?
The theme of the playoffs in the NHL is that teams are scoring on the power play, and that's how these games are being determined. And the rate is up around the league, where it felt like the entire first period of Game 2 between the Knights and the Avs, which Alex couldn't care less about right now, someone was shorthanded. And for the Islanders, the thing I'm actually more focused on watching this game through, you know, black and gold-colored glasses is the amount of puck luck this team gets. And it's not new to this series where it started happening now, but you look at most of their goals that they scored in Game 2. Of course, it's more than puck luck, but it's just ridiculous that even this latest goal stemmed from Tenorti not being able to clear the puck because his stick broke.
I'll tell you that, and look, I'm mad about this, but between this, between the Red Sox-Yankees game last night, between the NBA, the officials across sports for the last two or three months have been horrible. We'll talk about all of that coming up. Jake Asman joins us at 8:25. Keep it here. You're listening to Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
It's Barth and Kravitzky in for Pepe tonight on the Diehards. We do have the Bruins Islanders game five on in the studio. I know a lot of our audience, most of you aren't from Boston, most of you aren't hockey fans, but I do know, as a Boston sports fan, there are a lot of fans out there across this great country of ours who do not like Boston sports fans. So hopefully you'll at least enjoy maybe some of our anguish.
A little Schadenfreude for you.
Right, as you heard in that first segment.
On both sides of the aisle.
But I will say the Bruins finally get a power play. So you'll hear us react to this game. Almost a goal. You'll hear us react to this game clearly as it goes. But we're going to talk about everything else because there was a lot that happened this weekend in sports, and I want to get to it. We'll have Jake Asman joining us. He hosts the morning show on this network. We'll have him joining us in a little bit to talk baseball. But, Bobby, obviously the big news of the weekend, something that we have dedicated a significant amount of time to when we are together on this program, that is Julio Jones. That saga comes to an end. He goes to the Tennessee Titans. It's for a second and a fifth. Was it a second and a fourth, right?
Fourth, yep.
For a sixth.
And
Jones and a sixth.
Salary.
And they kept all the money. Anticlimactic, Bobby. That was the word I heard thrown around. Anticlimactic ending to that saga?
Yeah, but I didn't expect it to be a dark horse or for the
good answer.
Falcons to get a first-round pick from it. And so I think the people who are questioning this move for the Titans are so salty when they point out the questions on defense and they say 9-7 or 9-8 now. So salty, in my opinion. And here's the thing. The Titans aren't one move away from getting on the same tier as the Chiefs. But this puts them in position where if KC has unfortunate luck on the health front and the Titans' most impactful players in fact prove to be durable this season, now they're in striking distance and could in fact find themselves coming out of the AFC because, Alex, with Arthur Smith walking to, interestingly enough, Atlanta, they couldn't sit back. And as the guy who had such a profound impact on Ryan Tannehill, having the best seasons of his career by far, and maintain status quo offensively. So to now have Derrick Henry, Julio Jones, and A.J. Brown, that is a smash-mouth, taxing style of football. They just got more dynamic, and I think it's, at a minimum, going to be really fun to watch.
I said this last week. I said this a number of times over the past 2 or 3 weeks as the Bruins and Islanders go into the second intermission. Islanders lead 4-2. I've said this a number of times over the last few weeks. I think that the Tennessee Titans can finish with the best record in the AFC. I don't know that they're the best team. I know they're not the best team. The Chiefs are more talented. They have Patrick Mahomes. But you look at, you know, Tennessee's division, you kind of add the fact that it's a new wrinkle, and we see teams sometimes when they add the new wrinkles, the first year is the best year because they can just explode right out of the block. There's no tape on them, anything like that. And I, every time I say this, people chirp me, defense, 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 and that's fair. That's totally fair, but I think the defense underperformed last year. I think that they're more talented. Now, does that mean they'll bounce back? I don't know. We'll see. But I think that they just have the pieces in-house to be improved. I don't think they need to make major improvements to improve. And then you lose Jonnu Smith, but you lose Corey Davis. You replace them with Julio Jones. I think you're fine there. They had a great draft. This was a no-brainer for the Tennessee Titans to me. There was no reason for them not to pull the trigger on this. They had more to gain than anybody else, and they made it happen. That's just being smart.
How many times covering the Patriots have you commented on how special teams makes a good play, they pin him back, defense gets a stop, offense gets favorable field position, they come down and score a touchdown? It is a team game.
Complimentary football.
Absolutely. Yep. And so in today's game more than ever, and this goes for really every sport, because ratings are driven by people want to see offense. They want to see points go on the board. Yes, you need balance to win at the highest level, but it doesn't have to be 50-50. So the Titans getting better on the more important side of the ball is a win for their defense, too, that's going to make life easier for them. So right. I like this move. I think it also helps them defensively, albeit indirectly.
So now we're kind of left looking at, okay, because all eyes have been on Julio Jones. Is there another move to drop? Is there another shoe to fall? Is there another big name that we've been overlooking? Yeah, I look at a guy like Trey Flowers, I think would be really interested to move from Detroit. They can save, I think, $16 million against the cap this year and next year if they move him. Good player, but, you know, they're shifting out of a 3-4. He's a 3-4 end. They're going into a rebuild. They'd probably rather have that money than the player. So that's somebody I look at to potentially move. And then we still have Aaron Rodgers kind of hanging out there, and he's not at OTAs. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens between now and really when the NFL goes on summer vacation. And there's like a month and a half between minicamp and training camp where nothing totally happens. But it, you know, teams are going to respond now, especially I think in the AFC South, especially a team like the Colts, maybe if they can add somebody, get a little bit better in the first year of Carson Wentz, something like that. So, I mean, we'll see what happens there, but there might be another move coming.
Yeah, there's a few junctures where veterans tend to move. One is the dull period you mentioned. The other one is right as rosters are being finalized at the start of the season.
Yep.
And my question is, if the Lions were going to trade Trey Flowers, because that makes all the sense in the world, they should have done it at the draft, in my opinion. Maybe
probably.
They go player for player or something, but I think that was the time to move Flowers.
Well, no, because it's one of those post-June 1st things where the only way they actually open up the
sense.
Money, right? So, like, remember, because, like, Julio couldn't have been traded. Yeah.
And then the other one is Richard Sherman, who probably goes back to the Bay, but the longer he's out there, the door is open for a team. You mentioned one that could use help on the outside to add a cornerback.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you want to get into the free agents, right, because I was just talking about people being traded, there's still, I think, you know, unprecedented free agent depth, at least for this point in the offseason. That has to do with, you know, the shrinking salary cap and COVID, workouts, all of that. Sherman's an interesting name. You were hinting at the Patriots. We were talking off the air, I think, and people said Patriots don't have cornerback depth. If you look at the outside corners, right, guys who aren't going to play in the slot, who are going to, you know, you're going to put them on the outside in that division, you know, they're going to play man up with the Stephon Diggs, right? They're going to play man up with, I actually don't know who Miami's going to use as their number one wide receiver, but they have so many good wide receivers. Well, because Parker plays in the slot sometimes, but whoever's on the outside, those boundary corners, right? They have Stephon Gilmore. They have J.C. Jackson. Stephon Gilmore's contract's in an interesting spot. He's due to make $7 million because they fronted him a bunch of money last year to get him out of a holdout. And now he's a year removed from defensive player of the year, he should be making more than $7 million. J.C. Jackson, good corner. He's just on $3 million. He's on his RFA tender. He's been at minicamp, but he's also on a one-year deal. So even long-term, this is an issue. And then they don't really have anybody. Juwan Williams was a second-round pick 3 years ago, but they've tried to turn him into a safety. And they have a guy named Michael Jackson, ironically. Michael Jackson, they got him for a seventh-round pick from the Detroit Lions last year at roster cutdowns. He was on the practice squad. He's kind of a camp body. He, you know, might have an outside shot to make the team. And that's it. You know, they have some really good slot corners. Jonathan Jones, a really good player. Miles Bryant's an up-and-coming player. I think D'Angelo Ross is a guy who's been hurt but could potentially contribute down the line. They don't have any outside corners. They're going to need that. The Patriots do. And by the way, they play the Tennessee Titans, to bring it back to Julio Jones. That's going to be a very intriguing game because, one, you're going to get Stephon Gilmore probably versus Julio Jones. You're also going to get Derrick Henry versus what was last year the worst run defense in football in the Patriots, and they obviously overhauled it and brought in a ton of talent this year. So to go back to what we were originally talking about here, that Tennessee team is going to be really interesting to watch, I think, especially down the stretch because they've traditionally been a team with Derrick Henry where they get better as the year goes on because other players get banged up, and Derrick Henry's just so big and so physical, he doesn't get banged up as quick because he's dishing most of the punishment.
Well, and on top of it, you're taking a lethal play-action attack where you have to respect Derrick Henry and the threat of the run
right. And
adding Julio Jones to the mix.
And
It's a lot to handle where teams couldn't stop it when it was A.J. Brown and a bunch of questionable players who casual fans probably don't really know the names of, the Adam Humphreys of the world, for instance. Now,
well,
it's Julio Jones on the outside as A.J. Brown comes across the middle.
Right.
This play-action attack that was as good as any in the NFL, it just got not better, but exponentially grew.
So that's another one I think maybe some people are sleeping on. A.J. Brown, I mean, he's naturally going to get better. He's entering his third year, and that's just something that, you know, if he can improve, and he's kind of flirted with that top 10, top 5-ish receiver ranking in the league, like kind of get it. He hasn't been top 5, but he's kind of shown that potential. If he can get there, and Julio can even be 80% of what he was before that hamstring injury, the Tennessee Titans team is going to be tough to beat. And again, they're going to play the Texans twice, who are probably the worst team in football. Sorry to Andrew Carlson back in Houston. They're going to play the Jaguars twice, who drafted Trevor Lawrence, but that team's still a ways away, and who knows what kind of disaster Urban Meyer is going to turn that into. The Colts, on paper, are decent. They made the playoffs last year, but Carson Wentz is a total wild card. You don't know what he could be significantly worse than Phillip Rivers was. They win 5 of those 6 and then go 500 from there. They're a 12-win football team. That might be enough. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens with the Tennessee Titans and their new receiver, Julio Jones. We'll be back on the other side. Jake Asman of the Sports Map Radio Network and a longtime friend of mine. We're going to go back and forth on the Red Sox and the Yankees. I'm going to try as hard as I can to not let him talk about the Islanders. Don't miss. It's going to be a ton of fun. This is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
This is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Welcome back to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. It's Alex Barth and Bobby Krivitsky in for Anthony Pepe tonight. And joining us on the Progressive guest line, Progressive making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. He hosts the morning show on the Sports Map Radio Network, 9 to 11 Eastern. You can hear him then. You can follow him on Twitter, at Jake Asman. It is my former college roommate, actually, Jake Asman. So the two of us on the radio for the first time probably since 92 WICB Ithaca in 2015. Asman, what's going on, man?
Always great to be with you, my friend. I appreciate you guys having me. I mean, is Pepe ever on these days? I feel like you guys might Wally tip Pepe if this continues.
I don't know where he went. He's been, you know, his car hasn't been in the driveway for weeks. He's traversing this great country of ours. So here's the deal, Asman, because I know you want to chirp me about your Islanders and my Bruins, but we agreed to do this segment before that game started. So you've got to humor me with at least a couple questions relating to the Yankees before you tear my soul out, all right?
Well, that seems fair, considering the Yankees are just an utter disgrace of a baseball team. I have no problem at all tearing into them, so ask whatever you want about the New York Yankees.
So, okay, so I when I was writing my column about that series today for 98.5thesportshub.com here in Boston, I used the word spiraling. I said the Red Sox sent the Yankees spiraling with that sweep. Is that an accurate assessment of where that franchise is at right now?
Absolutely. I think that's a great way to put it. I mean, look, the Yankees came into this past week after they got swept by the Tigers and thought, all right, well, you're playing the Rays for four, then you have Boston at the end of the week, weekend series at home. We will learn a lot about what this Yankees team is by the end of the week. And they went 2-5 during the week. You know, they obviously split with Tampa. Two of the losses they had to Tampa were absolutely abysmal games that maybe they could have won. And then, you know, obviously over the weekend, the Red Sox just came in and just dominated the Yankees. The Yankees could not get the big hit. They didn't pitch well. Their bullpen, which has actually been one of the few strengths of the team this season, blew a big lead in the Sunday night game. And they're not a good team right now. They're very good and cannot get the hit. So the Red Sox definitely sent them spiraling. I mean, who thought the Yankees on June 7th would be in fourth place? But, you know, here they are, and they better correct, you know, their issues. They better start playing to the back of their baseball card soon. Otherwise, you know, you're talking about a season that's definitely going to get away from them.
Jake, Bobby Krivitsky here. For the record, I'm undecided on whether I'm going to help Alex pile onto you over the course of the segment or turn wrestling heel and go at him. But when it comes to the Yankees, what is the solution? What's the trade? Is there anyone specific or a few names that you're eyeballing? How do they come out of this spiral?
You know, it's crazy to say, guys. I don't know if there's an answer for how to fix, you know, this team right now. I mean, obviously, the pitching for the most part has been pretty good, and they're going to get Luis Severino back in a couple weeks, and he's apparently throwing 98 in some rehab starts. So that maybe could be, you know, your big, quote-unquote, pitching deadline acquisition. But, you know, for the most part, this team kind of is what they are. You have some injuries, and you'd like to get Boyd back at first base, but it's still not an excuse for the Yankees to just be one of the worst top teams in baseball. I mean, the only reason they're not 10 games under 500 right now is because their staff, their bullpen has been really good this year. They're lucky to be over 500. So I don't know what you do. I mean, DJ LeMay, who's been their best hitter the last 2 years, he's hitting under 260 right now. You know, you look at what he was able to do with runners in scoring position. He was almost a 400 hitter with runners on base. This year, he's been a 200 hitter. Other than Aaron Judge, there's not a single player in the Yankee lineup right now that has actually played to the back of their baseball card. Gleyber Torres, a couple years ago, he had 38 home runs. He doesn't seem to have his power right now. Gary Sanchez is too streaky. Brett Gardner's no longer an everyday player. I mean, you go up and down through this lineup, and once again, other than Aaron Judge, there's no one that's been consistently hitting. You could argue Gio Urshela, but he's not a huge power guy, and the Yankees are a team that's built to hit the long ball, and they're just not doing it. So unless guys start, once again, playing to the back of their baseball cards to just get out of this hitting funk, I don't really know what move you can make, because it's not like you can replace seven starters in your lineup by making a bunch of moves.
So beyond hitting, because there's a name you touched on I want to bring up, and I think last time I saw you in person, right before the pandemic, you said this player was the best at his position in the American League, and that's Gary Sanchez. He's hitting .310. He's got an OPS of .715. He's a catcher, but he can barely catch the ball. Is Gary Sanchez redeemable, or do they need to move on?
I think this is his last year with the team. I mean, they have tried to give Gary Sanchez the benefit of the doubt. You know, you could go back to, you know, the first half that he had maybe in 2019 when he made the MLB All-Star team, and you could point to that. But from really the second half of 2019 to all of last year and so far this year, he's just not the same player. You know, this is a guy, when he first came up, you thought he was going to hit .280, at 30-plus home runs, driving 100 runs, and you could live with his, you know, mediocre to below-average defense, because he does a good job throwing out runners, and obviously his bat's going to speak for himself. But if he's not going to hit, I mean, that's a major weakness in your lineup. But besides him, I mean, there are so many other issues with this team before Sanchez, but he's included because obviously, you know, a couple of years ago, every Yankee fan thought they had the next Craig catcher in the American League in Sanchez. And really, since that second half of 2019, he's been one of the worst offensive players in the sport at his position.
Jake, it seems like Knicks fans have quickly thrown out this notion of build slowly, augment through the draft, and then we'll go out and we'll get stars, to now everyone is dreaming about Damian Lillard coming to New York. Is that where you're at as well?
You know, if they could get him, how can I say no? Obviously, it's going to cost a ton. But, you know, we've seen this before. If a superstar comes out and says, I want to go to a certain team, more times than not, they end up, you know, getting their wish and getting to that particular team. I don't know if we're at that point yet with Lillard, if he wants to leave, but I do know this. I think the year that the Knicks have, you know, that he just had under Tom Thibodeau, I mean, that's really the biggest impact, right? You now have stars that might actually consider going to your team. You might have free agents that will actually want to sign with you. They have a really good young core in place. I'm in favor of continue to draft well. They got two first-round picks this year. They, you know, R.J. Barrett's only 20. Emmanuel Quickly just completed his rookie year. They have some nice young pieces on this team, so they don't need to make a crazy move just for the sake of making a move. But if a guy like Dame Lillard becomes available and he wants to play for you, then you obviously have to, you know, pretty much do whatever to get that guy. I don't know if that happens, but it's nice to at least be in the conversation once again as a Knicks fan that a superstar might actually want to go there.
All right, Bruins Islanders third period about to get underway. And oh my, all right, there's a change in net. Yeah, you just saw Jeremy Swayman is going to replace
Drink
Duke Arras.
Here's Jake Asman,
who allowed four goals. I don't know how I feel about this. Jake, which word better defines the Islanders in this series, lucky or good?
I think they're good, guys. This is how they play. They have unbelievable goaltending. I mean, Varlamov's been the best player in the series, I think you could argue. And, you know, they don't take dumb penalties. They're well coached. They play their system. I mean, you're talking about an Islanders team that has arguably the best head coach in the league, and obviously Lou Lamoriello is a Hall of Fame executive. The moves at the deadline, again, Kyle Palmieri, who's leading them in playoff goals, and they get Travis Ajak, who's been a veteran that's played in so many big playoff games. It's paid off, and obviously Matt Barzell's come alive the last couple games. He's their best offensive player, and he's starting to play like it. So you definitely need to get some breaks along the way. I know you Boston fans, I'm sure, are not thrilled with some of the officiating in this game, but ultimately, you know, the Islanders have been this team all year. This is kind of what they do. They find ways to win because they're so well-coached and fundamentally sound.
I mean, puck luck, that's what it is. It's puck luck at this point for them. Is there a team of destiny feel with this team between, you know, just kind of how long they were mediocre and it being the last year at the Coliseum and all that? Is that an accurate label for this group?
I sure hope so. I mean, I'm always kind of wary of putting the destiny label on a team because I felt that way about previous teams of mine and has now ended up, you know, working out that way. So you just never know. I'll tell you what, though. This team has played so many playoff games together. They've played the second most amount of playoff games in the league over the last couple of years. So to me, it's not a coincidence they're doing this. They've been to the second round now 3 years in a row. They were in the conference finals a year ago. And the Islanders are always looked at like this little engine that could. But the reality is they have a really good team full of young players and veterans, a really good head coach. They should not be this huge underdog that maybe people naturally perceive them today. But I think they feed off that, and it's really helped them.
Somebody just got stonewalled by a rookie goalie.
Eberle.
I didn't see who that was. It was Jordan Eberle on the shot. Let me ask you, let's bring it all back around, Jake, here, and we'll let you go soon because I know you want to watch the rest of this game. But let's bring it back around. New York's a baseball town, but at least in your fandom, right, in that sect of New York sports fans, the Jets aren't great, but they have this exciting young prospect quarterback. The Islanders are making this deep playoff run. The Knicks just put together their best season in what, two decades. Are the Yankees in any danger of losing some ground in the market when it comes to, you know, the market share and where fans are looking?
Well, when the Knicks are good, they're still probably the most like talked about team in New York, just because, like, unlike Yankees, Mets, and, you know, obviously Jets and Giants, you know, no one really counts the Nets as a true, like, team in that discussion, even with the fact that
you didn't hear Kyrie Irving, though? They got the whole world behind them.
Right. I mean, he successfully has managed to make the whole world and New York turn against him. So you're right about that. But I would say this. Obviously, you know, the Yankees would take a backseat to the Mets if the Mets end up being this first-place team all year. It's never going to not be a Yankee town, of course. But the Mets have a huge fan base, and the Yankees better figure it out because they're not going to be a team that's getting a lot of love if the Mets keep winning and there's all these other teams that are doing some exciting things.
Jake, Alex brought up Zach Wilson there. What is your assessment for him? What are your thoughts as he gets ready to make his New York Jets debut?
1 minute here.
Well, my thoughts are Brock Nelson is a beautiful American-born hockey player, and that was a fantastic goal that he just scored. The put the New York
the series is over.
5-2.
He's a rookie. All right.
We'll see, man.
I'll let you enjoy that goal off the air. Jake Asman, morning host on the Sports Map Radio Network, 9 to 11 Eastern. So me and Jake went to college together at Ithaca. He's my roommate for a while, and I am very glad that I'm not watching this game with him right now. We'll be back. We'll try not to react to too much hockey. I want to talk about the basketball playoffs with Bobby. We'll get into more baseball talk as well, the Red Sox-Yankees series. You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to The Diehards on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
So after Jake gets off the phone, the Bruins come back and they score. It's 5-3. David Pastrnak, his second of the game. We'll keep tracking this throughout the night here, Bobby.
At least they scored. I mean, they had to strike early in this period, down three, if they're going to make something happen.
It's unbelievable the way this game has played out. And I guess I'll do what we've been doing all night. We'll kind of take this game and apply it to a wider view so we're not just, you know, in this one niche sport, in this one market. The Bruins have controlled this game. The Bruins have been in control of the pace and the tempo of this game for more than half of the, you know, whatever they've played, 45 minutes.
Well, so, okay, you want to expand it out into other topics, and that's the right approach, but I want to expand it out into what happened last game. The turning point for me is not David Pastrnak missing the open net. The turning point to me in that game is when the Bruins go up 1-0, the Islanders challenge the goal. I fully expected it to come off the board. It doesn't, meaning the Bruins get another power play. And right there, I said to everyone I was watching with, this is the game right here. And sure enough, the Bruins don't score on the 5-on-4. And immediately after it, the Islanders come down and put one in the back of the net to tie it up at 1. They go on to win the game. If the Bruins had won that game, they probably close out the series tonight. Now, momentum is at such a point towards the Islanders that it seems like they're the team who's going to win the series unless the Bruins can pull off a comeback akin to Game 7 against the Maple Leafs.
It's just, it's not capitalizing. It's not capitalizing when you have momentum. It's been bizarre how well they've played in this series to be in the spot that they are in. Let's go over to the NBA playoffs real quick, Bobby, here. I'd run through some games with you like we do on a weekly basis. Let's start with the game, was it yesterday, last night, Hawks-Sixers? I think that was in the afternoon.
Yep.
Hawks pick up the win, and so I won't lie. I was sunning myself on the beach while this game was going on. I was not watching, but, you know, my buddy tells me the Hawks won. I'm like, oh, Joel Embiid come back from injury. Must have been rusty. But he goes, no, he had like, what was it, 29 points? 39 points, you know, double-double, all that. You surprised? Not just that the Hawks won, but the Hawks won with Embiid having the game he had?
Yeah, every aspect of it was a surprise. Now, here's the thing. We have a tendency to overreact to game ones in a playoff series in the NBA. We treat them like every Sunday in the NFL, where, you know, don't overreact to one game, but then it happens and you just get caught up in it. And so Atlanta, credit to them. They came in, and for most of that game, they were beating the brakes off the Sixers. Trae Young was unbelievable. I know Philly fans were frustrated with how often he's drawing fouls and manipulating contact like James Harden.
That's what he does.
Or, by the way, Joel Embiid, too. So you got one as well. And, I mean, the Hawks, they just were flat-out dominating them. And of all people, it's the guy who normally does not create the spark for the Sixers, Ben Simmons, who stepped up the defensive intensity. He got them going in transition. And when it looked like, even late in the fourth quarter, the lead was too large for them to get back into it, here they come. They get it all the way to within three. But once again, Bogdan Bogdanovic nails a clutch three, silences the crowd with better finger placement than Trae Young at the Garden. Uh-huh. And the Hawks were able to hold on and win by four.
So, but this is where I'm surprised, because the Hawks didn't win this game because the Sixers didn't play well, right? You'd think the Sixers losing the playoffs, oh, Ben Simmons got exposed. Oh, Joel Embiid, you know, didn't play well or got hurt or whatever. Oh, the rest of their roster got exposed. They pretty much checked all the boxes of what you'd expect the Sixers to do in a win. The Hawks went in there and just straight up outplayed them. That's why I know you said don't overreact to game one, and you're right, but can the Hawks duplicate what they did? I don't think that that's so far out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah, the Hawks can replicate what they did. The problem that killed the Sixers was that, one, they had 19 turnovers, and some of them came at the worst possible time, especially when you're trying to overcome a 20-point deficit.
So did you view them as just sloppy offensive turnovers,
in a lot
or
of
the
cases,
defense
in
making
of,
plays? Okay,
there,
so it was more
there
the
was
Sixers.
An instance, and it was in the first half, so it's easier to overcome. But there was a stretch in the game where they come back from commercials, they've got Doc Rivers wired up for sound, and what he tells them is, too many turnovers, too many sloppy turnovers, we have to value the ball, we have to protect it. And after that, three straight turnovers, including an offensive foul. I mean, immediately after they played the soundbite. So, Philly, they were sloppy in this game one. They were not tested against the Washington Wizards. I do expect, as long as Embiid stays healthy, that's always the caveat, that they're going to be just fine in this series.
So how about this one? And I don't know if you've been keeping up on the score of this one, Bobby. Nets and Bucks, have you seen the score of this one?
I've seen the score. It is surprising. They're beating the brakes off them.
65-41 at the half. And I actually think, I don't have it in front of me, but I was tracking this here for the last couple of minutes. I think the Bucks actually went on a little like 4-0, 6-0 run there at the end. So without James Harden as well, this is kind of, is this what everybody was saying? Are we witnessing whatever, you know, oh yeah, the Nets superstars haven't played together all year, but it doesn't matter. They need one or two games to get going, and then they're just going to be a complete wagon. And, I mean, I won't lie. The Nets were a good team. I wasn't wowed by them this season. I don't know that I was necessarily wowed by them against the Celtics. They looked good, but everybody's telling me that, you know, this might be the greatest collection of talent in the last 20 years. I don't know that I was more impressed with them than, you know, some of those Warriors teams or the LeBron Heat teams or whatever. Is this the ramp up? Is this what we can expect? Is this game just a random blowout, or is this what the Nets are going to be from here on out?
Well, one of those fair questions was, are they going to sleepwalk through this series? Because their big three has a history of it in the playoffs. Kevin Durant was a member of a Golden State Warriors team in the 2018 postseason that was content to sleepwalk its way to a title, and they would have lost. Once again, we dumped on the Texans. I'm sorry to dump on the Rockets now, Houston fans. But
sorry,
if
Andrew.
It wasn't for Chris Paul's injury and a historically bad shooting night in Game 7 from beyond the arc, the Rockets advance and they win the title. Didn't happen that way. James Harden against the San Antonio Spurs the year before it in the playoffs. Kawhi Leonard gets hurt. It should be over. He took his ball and went home. He just packed it in. Maybe he didn't believe they were a championship contender, but it's not a great sign that two of your three best players have decided to quit. Another one tanked a postseason series against the same opponent, the Milwaukee Bucks. So there were questions. Will they all of a sudden flip a switch that hasn't been on all season? And is it going to matter? Because the Bucks aren't as good, but they do have a legitimate big three of their own. They're capable of beating the Nets, even though they're not the favorite, and upsets usually don't happen in a seven-game series. But as we're seeing, even without James Harden tonight, Brooklyn is just curb-stomping them.
The Bucks' big three, I mean, that's like, you know the meme. It's like, we have this, no, this at home. The Bucks' big three is the big three at home.
We got McDonald's at home.
Right, compared to the Nets. Is it time, and look, I'm a Giannis fan. Is it time we kind of reevaluate what the widespread view has been of him for the last couple of years? Because I think he's been, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, I think the consensus has been he's a top three player, and he's certainly still an elite weapon in some regards, but I think some of the expectation with the hype he was getting was him rounding his game out, and I don't know that that's happened at least at the rate that he needs to stay in that conversation when you have, you know, players like Trae Young, players like Luka, when you have Kevin Durant come back, for him to stay in that elite MVP conversation.
The problem with Giannis is, and it's such a small list of people, and obviously if you're a Bucks fan, you're going to disagree with me, that's fine. He is a top-tier superstar, multiple MVPs, back-to-back, but like Anthony Davis, he has not proven he could be the best player on a championship team. That is an even smaller list than the guys on the top-tier superstar roster. And so with Giannis, one of the problems is that he's not much in the way of a facilitator. So, for instance, last year when Miami forms a wall and dares him to beat him, his game isn't such where he can pull up on a dime and hit a jump shot or get into the defense and kick it out to someone. So he has the tools to be a great player, but he doesn't show, and I'm skeptical he's ever going to evolve into the guy who can be the best player on a championship team.
So that kind of gets to my point here when I talk about, you know, do we have to temper our expectations with Giannis? I'm not necessarily saying that he's overrated as it currently states, but I mean, what year was he MVP again? I can't remember the previous two seasons.
Last year and the year before.
Right. So, you know, when he was doing that, and even the year before when he was coming up, 23, 24, 25, it was, you know, this kid's only 23 and he's doing this. When he develops, when he gets better, it's going to be incredible. And have we seen that development? Has he made that jump that we were assuming he was going to make at that time?
Yeah. I mean, he's grown every season he's in the league, which is a credit to him. This season, it's come in the form of recognizing after that exit against Miami last year in the bubble, recognizing that he has to get the ball in his spots more often and attack from the top of the key less. So it's more getting the ball at the elbows or down low and attacking from there where he's virtually unguardable. He's been involved as the screener more often this season than he was last year, which is a nice development. But again, if you don't present much in the way of getting easy baskets for your teammates, and you're not someone who can just pull up and get those mid-range buckets that in the playoffs become so valuable because it's what the defense will give you more times than not, then it does put a ceiling on you, even if it's really high. If you're not at that top tier like a Kevin Durant, for instance, then it's going to have a major impact.
And it's, I guess for me, it's just we haven't seen signs that he's going to develop that. He hasn't really shown right. it in his game that he's going to. So that's where, you know, I have paused. Let's go out west real quick here, and we can get into more NBA in the next segment. I don't want to rush you through these, but, you know, I do want to get to them. I feel like Nuggets, and I don't know that this is like a super hot take I'm projecting. It's like it's a hot take. It's not.
Hit me.
Nuggets-Suns is just going to be a really fun series. I think that's just going to be, you know, 6-7 games back and forth. Just a really enjoyable watch.
Yeah, that's going to be an absolute slugfest. I love that Phoenix, in that Game 6, I think it speaks to the character of the team, that they came out and they went right at Anthony Davis. A lot of times, especially when star players try to play injured, the team just lets him hang around out there, and sometimes it comes back to bite you. And to me, it's no different than when Tom Brady goes out to block someone and doesn't get touched. If you want to be out here, then you're
fair game.
There's
your chance, right.
And so that's how the Suns treated Anthony Davis, and they ran him out of the gym. And so Devin Booker, who dropped 47 points, a lot of it came from a hot start that came from attacking Anthony Davis. So I just think it speaks to the culture that's building in Phoenix with James Jones at the top, Monty Williams at head coach, who easily could have won Coach of the Year over Tom Thibodeau. And I'm real curious to see what happens in this series, because all of a sudden the landscape has changed to the point that you can make a strong case the Suns are the favorites to come out of the West.
Is this an easier opponent for them in round two than it was in round one against the Lakers?
No, because of the fact that Anthony Davis was hurt.
Okay.
LeBron James wasn't 100%.
Well, he'll never be 100% again, as he said that. You know, the great LeBron James, let's see how you will about LeBron. Fantastic athlete, taken down by an ankle sprain of all things. But, how do they match up with the Nuggets, too? Can they use any of what they did against the Lakers to help them against the Nuggets? Because, again, you're in a different style of player, but you dealt with an elite big man in Anthony Davis, who obviously wasn't the centerpiece, but was a key piece. And now you're dealing with an elite big man again in Jokic here up against the Nuggets.
Yeah, I think they're going to go right at Jokic defensively. You need to exhaust him. They can do it in a number of ways, including if he wants to hang back, they have what Portland didn't, and that is a gigantic human being at center in DeAndre Ayton, who also has the athleticism to make him pay by spacing the floor and catching it and doing something with it, or throw him the lob as he dives to the rim. And so I think that Jokic is going to be someone who he played like every game this season. He's put a huge burden on himself, especially without Jamal Murray there, and that the Phoenix Suns, just like they went at AD, part of that strategy is going to be go at the head of the snake and wear down Jokic.
Suns are my team now. I'm a Celtics fan. They're out. I like the Suns. I like the Hawks. Those are my teams. Real quick here, we've got a minute. If this series is super interesting to you, we can do more on the other side. I have no juice in Clippers Jazz. I can't bring myself to care about either of these teams. Is that just me, or is this actually going to be a bad series?
What I think is that it comes in with no juice. It's going to develop into one that even casual fans get into. I think it's going to be really good basketball. And I think both teams are capable of not only winning the West, but winning the championship. So I think what people are going to see is that it should play out in the form of an even fight. And that tends to capture is the other word I almost said there. That tends to get fans' attention.
Well,
two high-level teams
that's true.
Evenly matched, it tends to make for good basketball.
Well, we know Nuggets-Suns is going to be great. Bucks-Nets, it seems like we can write off. Hawks-Sixers is the wild card.
Which is a shame, because we thought that Bucks-Nets would be the best series of the entire postseason. And the Nets have, even without James Harden,
65-41
and a half. Them.
65-41 and a half to take a two-game lead in the series for the Nets over the Bucks. We got a lot more to talk to. There was also a fight, air quotes, fight last night. I want to touch on that real quick. We'll do that on the other side. This is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
This is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Back on the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network, it's Alex Barth and Bobby Krivitsky in for Anthony Pepe. The Monday show. I mean, this is going on months now. Right.
Yeah, we've upgraded. I think this has become an official Monday night deal.
We should get our own open. Andrew, tell me who I need to talk to about that.
I'll get you the email address.
Every time we come back, I have to say, it's Barth and Krivitsky and for Pepe. It probably sound like a broken record, right?
We need a new open, that's for sure. And the second thing we need, and this is really just for us to be honest, is the cartoon on the back of the ball.
I have a cartoon. You just can't. So for
one of the two of us.
For those of you can't see, Anthony Pepe gets cartoons made of all the hosts here. Mine looks nothing like me. And that's why you can't tell them up there on the wall. But
yeah. I think it looks more like Matt McCarthy than you.
It kind of does. You're right. Yeah, Matt McCarthy's doesn't look anything like him. Matt McCarthy's looks like Sam Darnold.
I think Matt looks like Jake Asman.
A little bit. A little bit. You watched Fight last night? The Fight, air quotes?
I wasn't going to pay $50 for it. And
I've never paid for it. I didn't ask if you paid for it. I asked if you watched it. It's two very different questions.
I watched it.
I watched a little bit.
I put my business out on these streets.
You know what? I like the fanfare of it's normally pretty good. You get some good memes out of it.
Pierce in the building.
It does kill me, though, as a boxing fan, that boxing has fallen this far. Boxing has become professional wrestling, and, like, golf has basically become boxing with the rivalries these guys have, right, and what's going on with Bryson and all that. So it's unfortunate because I thought boxing, you know, right before the pandemic was in a really good spot with the Wilder fight, the Wilder-Fury fight, but I guess I got to settle for the Paul brothers. We'll talk more about that on the other side. Playoff talk as well. You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.